just being in a little community and liking each other's stuff. And I met so many cool people in Craft Lake City. That's just like, this is, if there's nothing else, I just love being in this little community. And I really enjoyed that through my husband as well. I don't act, but I'm in this little acting community and I love it so much. So you realize how important that kind of thing is.
I said that was off the record, but then you were all articulate again. So I'm probably going to, I'm probably going to take what you said and plug that into the interview somewhere.
Okay. Whatever you want to do. You're just the editor.
The voice you just heard belongs to Erin Hayes.
Hi, my name is Erin Hayes. I am a mom and a nurse, and I work from home in nursing education. And I love dogs and hiking and taking naps.
Who met with me over Zoom in the social distancing of 2020 to introduce me to the beautiful art of quilling or paper filigree. I'm your host, Liz Christensen, and it's all in the telling. Welcome to episode 53 with my guest, Erin Hayes. Erin began quilling when the pandemic forced her into quarantine, and she missed camping in Utah's beautiful Red Rock wilderness. Just a few months later, and Erin is busy filling commissions.
I don't even know exactly how to pronounce the name of the art that you do. So tell me what that is.
It's called quilling.
Like quilting, but no T.
Yep, just quilling, yeah.
So what does quilling mean exactly? It's obviously paper art. Is it more defined than that?
It's also known as paper filigree. So that's another, I don't see that very often, but in my research, that's also what it's called. Some of the history of it is it first showed up way back when, and nuns in smaller, less wealthy parishes would use it to decorate their religious artifacts when they couldn't afford the metal to do so. So they would use paper and then paint it gold, and it really was not that distinguishable from real metal. So that's kind of where it started, they think. That's been some of the earliest. And then also it was a approved pastime for girls during the time when they were, you know, they'd sit and do embroidery. This was also another approved pastime because it wasn't too taxing. So it was another little thing that they could do if they weren't into embroidery. So that's some of the information that I've found on it. Just in my somewhat limited research. Right now, it is very popular in Eastern European countries and also in India. So I see a lot on my Instagram. I follow and am followed by a lot of people from those countries. So it's been interesting.
It seems like the pattern of it, it's obviously like 3D paper, if I can describe it for the audience that's listening. It seems like there's a lot of rolling more than folding.
Yes, it's rolling. I'm at my desk with all my stuff. So what it is you have these little tools that just have a little tiny slot in them. And then you just have your strips of paper and you just put it in the slot and roll it. And then you can, you know, control how tight the rolls are or how loose. And if they are loose, then you can, you know, shape them into different shapes and that kind of thing. So there is a lot of rolling. Do you want me to show stuff on video?
I love that. Yeah, that'd be great.
So this is what I'm working on right now. And you can just kind of see, so it's got a lot of aspen trees. So there's all these little leaves here are just little rolled bits of paper. So that's fairly simple. That's just kind of very easy. And then like I use flat strips of paper that are glued up on their edge for like the tree trunks. And then like the little detail on the tree trunks are either rolled or just flat. And then my little cabin over here, you know, there's no rolling there. It's all just straight paper.
How do you glue it on its edge?
I use a needle. So I've got my glue on my little credit card. So I put my glue on my card and I either use a needle or another little sharp tool, or I can also use my tweezers where I take the roll and just kind of dip it in the glue on my card.
I have a lot of like finger dexterity or precision. So the first worry I would have if I tried this myself is that I'm going to squash everything that I'm putting.
That happens, yeah.
Okay.
That's definitely, you know, I've not been doing this very long, but just as I go, I find I'm becoming a lot more delicate and able to place without just smashing it down. So when I do look at some of my first things I put together, there's a lot of just kind of like, you know, so it just takes practice I wouldn't consider myself super dexterous with my hands, but, you know, I could never be a surgeon or anything like that, but, you know, and I do when I'm putting stuff down, I find myself shaking a little bit as I think and I get it in there. So there is a scene from Toy Story where, what's his name? The cowboy. Oh my gosh.
Oh, Woody.
Woody. I was going to say Andy, where Woody is being repainted by this little old man. And he comes in to like sew his hat back up and that kind of thing. And he gets in really close and he's shaking. And then all of a sudden he just starts. And I feel like that's kind of like what it is. Like I'm going to place something down and I'm shaky. And then once I get right there, I'm able to place. So
what happens if you mess up? Because paper and glue, they don't separate really well.
They don't separate really well. The problem is if you mess up and you want to replace it, now you're left with a little bit of glue. Maybe where you don't want to, which may not be immediately visible, but then when it dries, you have this little bit of shine. So, you know, that's annoying when you get done and all of a sudden you're like, there's all these glue marks and that kind of thing. So I do try and get in there if I do have to move something with a little paintbrush and try and soak up some of the glue so I don't get that. And then if I do place something and then later I'm like, oh, I don't like that color, that kind of thing, you can carefully tweeze it out and replace it with another color, but as long as you're going to place it right on there so you cover up the glue and any little tearing that you've done of the paper. So
are you finding that there's different types of paper that work well for this and ones that don't?
You can buy the paper pre-cut. It comes in all sorts of different sizes. I have found that I prefer this size, which is little 3 millimeter. That's my preferred size. When I first started, I was using 5 millimeter. And then as I kind of progressed, I didn't need quite as much space. And I just found I like the thinner paper, but it does go all the way up to 10 that I've seen and down to 2, which would be really tiny. So this quilling paper, mostly I find it comes with, not a lot of it is in English. So, and it's just mostly I order it from little specialty shops. I've been around town here and they don't sell, you know, I'm like, do you have quilling paper? And they're like, yeah, paper, but they don't have it pre-cut. I do have one of those nice paper cutters like that I used to have at work. And I'm like, oh, I wish I still had that. But I ordered one on Amazon. And so you are able to cut your own paper. Which obviously that's going to be a little more labor intensive, but I have done that if I want a specific color. I don't know what weight this paper is, but it's perfect. I have tried using slightly thicker paper and slicing it myself. And then, it doesn't curl as nicely. You've got little folds in it and that kind of thing. So
I was actually going to ask if you cut your own paper, because one of the first things I was struck with when I saw your art was this looks so difficult in terms of precision and time.
It is a lot of time, yeah.
Holy cow. But I wanted to ask you, when I look at your picture, there's a lot of texture. Obviously, it's 3D. Mm-hmm. But as I look really closely, the paper itself seems to be solid color. Are you using any kind of textured or printed paper?
I have just barely started doing that. I sent you a picture of one I did of a woman meditating, and the background on that is cut paper that I just cut from old scrapbooking supplies that I've had for, 15 years. And so I just cut scrapbooking paper, and some of that is more textured, and then glued it down to my white. I haven't used textured or printed paper to quill, like for the actual coils and that kind of thing, but I'm starting to use it more in background just to give something beyond just the white. They do have really neat specialty papers. Like they have a really neat gilded one. So someone is gilding the edges of the paper, so it comes out gold or silver or copper. I tried to order that some last night and they do not ship to the United States at this time. So I wasn't able to get some. I did try and buy my own metallic paper and cut it myself, but it really needs to be gilded. It really needs to be painted on the edges. And even if you do find that, you're just going to get that on the very edge of the paper. So even buying a whole piece is not going to give you a lot of bang for your buck there. So I'm still looking for more specialty type things. I would like to use more metallics and gilded, but so far everything is just a flat basic paper. So
I think that's really impressive that you're getting so much texture out of solid colors. because it really seems very rich and full when I'm looking at that. You said typically white background. Is that your style or is that like part of the traditional look?
That's my style. And if you look online and look up quilling, there's very specific styles. When I first started doing this, I was kind of like, oh, I'm not doing it right, you know, like, because it's very flowers. There's lots of flowers, lots of floral work, and you'll see the same type of flower over and over again. And I don't see a lot of doing pictures like this. There is some of it, and I've seen that called painting with paper. So I kind of look at that, I'm like, okay, this is more my style. And it's more organic. Like there's people who do these amazing, really geometric, like mandalas and that kind of thing that are just beautiful where I'm like, I don't think I have the precision to do that. And sometimes when I'm looking at other people's work, I'm kind of like, oh, I stink at this. You know, it's like, I'm not doing this right. But then I've just kind of been like, you know what? I'm doing it because I enjoy it and it's fine to have your own style. One thing I do see a lot of, I follow a couple of women in India who do this, and they use it to make like full-on 3D little shapes that they use as offerings. And I don't want to go too much into it because I don't fully understand it or that kind of thing, but they make little food, like a little basket with fruit in it, and it's fully 3D. You know, you can hold it in your hand, and then they are used as offerings, and I'm not able to read everything that they put. You know, I don't speak anything else. So, so there's lots of different ways to do it. And the way I've just found that works the best for me and that I enjoy the most is kind of doing these pictures. And I do some 3D in that, like, I'll layer it. I'll put in different colors so it looks a little more textured. But like on these little trees here, like I'll have one layer of leaves and I'll put a few little on top of that layer to make it more depth and more 3D.
Do you frame these and put glass in front of them or?
I do. Just I'm at Michael's all the time and I buy their shadow boxes and they're pretty easy to frame in just a shadow box because it needs to, you know, you need to have enough room that you're not crushing the paper. I have had one professionally framed, which was beautiful way back when I made something for my mom for Mother's Day and I took it to a gallery and had it framed and it was beautiful. But man, professional framing is so expensive. I mean, you're paying for what you get, but they use like museum quality glass. So there was no glare on it. And they did a custom frame and it was very pretty. So, you know, if I did something that I was really proud of and wanted to really preserve, I would do that again. But most of my items that I mail out to people are in Michael's shadow box frames.
Do you have an Etsy store?
I do. I've got a little Etsy store. I sold a couple of items through Etsy store. I did Craft Lake City a few weeks ago, and I sold a few things through my Etsy store through Craft Lake City, but everything else I've done has just been commissions, people reaching out on Instagram or on Facebook and saying, can you do something like this? And then I kind of explore it and do it. But I like to put up everything I do on my Etsy store just so people can kind of see what I am able to do. So if you do look at my Etsy store, a lot of it is items that are custom that just kind of like, this is what I can do if you want to talk to me about that. So
what else would you say describes your style?
I would say it's very organic. I'm not a real precision person. I'm not math brained or left brained. So while I really admire people who can do that kind of precision, mine is a lot more swirly. I do a lot of nature scenes. When I first started this, it was in quarantine. So it really hasn't been that long at all. But I started doing it in quarantine because we've always gone camping in spring, like to Moab, which is my favorite place in the world. And we weren't able to do that this year. And so what I've done the most of is I've done like 5 delicate arch scenes. So that's really where it started, is I was kind of using it to like visit places that I was missing. So I did a lot of campfires. I did delicate arch several times. I did red rock scenes and that kind of thing. And that was really helpful for my mental health, especially while it was still cold and, you know, we were stuck inside in March and terrible air here in Salt Lake City. So that's really kind of how I started doing it. And now I've moved on to, well, mostly I've done commissions since then, and I kind of have it in my head like, you know what, I'm going to do commissions through Christmas, and then I might take a break from doing them and just kind of go back to my own, because I haven't done anything for myself for a little while now.
I'm totally floored that you started that within this calendar year, because I mean, it's not like I haven't been paying attention or whatever, but you don't catch what everybody's
cool
at. And so when it popped up on my radar that you were doing this, there was nothing to indicate that you weren't totally pro and had been doing this for a really long time. The quality's like, I'm just really surprised.
Well, thank you very much. I do have a lot of people like, oh, I want to try that. Like my sisters are like, you should do a little workshop for us and show us how. And I'm like, oh, this is kind of my thing. I don't want to teach you how to do it. And there's nothing to learn. I mean, it is honestly just coming up with a picture, and you can sketch it out first, and then you just glue paper over your sketch, you know? And so I'm just kind of like, I have progressed a lot since I first started. I look at my first couple of pieces and at the time I was like, oh, this is amazing. And I posted shots to my Instagram or Facebook and like would send my family a new shot like every hour or something like, look at this, this is amazing. And now I look at those pieces, I'm kind of like, oh, cute. They look very, they're kind of childlike and that kind of thing. So I do see myself progressing, which is kind of exciting. I'm like, oh, maybe in a couple of years I will be able to do these really geometric, succinct, precise things that people do that are just so amazing and so beautiful. And right now I'm just kind of leaning into my strength, which is more organic and more less precision. And that's what I'm doing right now. So I'm excited to continue to progress. But yeah, I do feel kind of like, I just started this. I don't know what I'm talking about. You know, I feel I've got that imposter syndrome for sure. But the thing about quarantine is I have had a lot of time to do it. I am doing it every day. I listen to a lot of podcasts. And so while I'm listening to my podcast, I'm just sitting here doing that. And that's kind of become my thing that I do instead of watching TV. I don't really watch TV and that kind of thing. So I'm either working or I'm walking my dog or I'm sitting here doing that. So
tell me the story of how you decided to do this. And then when doing this went from something that you did to yourself for yourself, to like, I think I'll have an Etsy store, and your first response to taking a commission.
Yeah, sure. Started, you know, I've been aware of it for a long time and I've always admired it. I actually looked it up because I had in my mind, I'm like, I read a Martha Stewart magazine article about this forever ago. And I did. I looked it up. It was in February 2002 that I read an article about it. 2002 is the year I got married. So I was a little bit distracted, certainly. But I remember reading about it and being like, I want to do that. And I do remember looking into like, where can I get this paper? I went to this office supply store and asked if they had it and they didn't. And anyone who knows me, I'm the type of person who, if things get difficult, I give up pretty quickly. Like if I go somewhere and there's no parking, I'm like, oh, that didn't work out. And I go home. I'm easily defeated. I was interested in starting it, you know, almost 20 years ago. And I did buy some paper and I'm like, I'll just cut it myself with scissors. And I don't have one of those little tools that they use. I'll just do it by hand. And I think I sat there and like curled paper for a second. And I'm like, man, this is not, you know, without just this very simple little slotted tool, you can't, you know, it's almost impossible. So, and I immediately got rid of all that stuff. And then I got engaged a month later and I didn't think about it again for 100 years. So I've been kind of aware of it. And then it does pop up sometimes in advertisements, I've noticed. I'll see it in print advertisement, or I've seen a few where like they do stop motion camera. So they'll have like some little quilled tree or something, and then they'll do stop motion with the leaves flowing away. And you know, I can't tell you any of the products that they were advertising, but I noticed those commercials and been like, oh, I remember reading about that. That's so neat. And so it's just kind of like always aware of it, but never really looked into it. And then we went into quarantine and wasn't thinking about it a lot. I'm not sure what popped up that made me decide to try it. I was on Amazon lying on the couch and I bought this little $20 kit from Amazon that just had some paper and a tool, just one little plastic quilling tool. And I just bought that from Amazon and it came the next day. Yay, Amazon. And that's kind of where it started. And the first thing I did was a portrait of Queen Elizabeth I, who I'm a big fan of.
That sounds like an ambitious beginning.
It was. So, but I thought like, oh, do you know what I could do is I could take like orange paper and do swirls for her hair. That was kind of the first thing that went through my mind, like, oh, this would work for that. So I did this, you know, and it's, I could probably find it, but it's just this really funny, cute little like little portrait of her. And it took forever, like it took days and days and days. And I wanted her to be wearing like pearl necklaces and have pearls on her dress. So I was making these teeny little white curls. And I would just, you know, I remember sitting in, you know, home church at my sister's house and just making these teeny little white curls and keeping them in a bowl so I could add all these pearls to her dress and that kind of thing. And then, you know, the dress, that really leans itself towards quilling as well, because there's just all the swirls and that kind of thing. So I made it, and then I put Tudor roses around her, just little curled Tudor roses. And I finished this and I was so proud of it, and it took days and days and days, and I really enjoyed it. And from there, I'm like, that was my first. And then I'm also a big fan of David Bowie. So my second project was the Ziggy Stardust, you know, the famous, his eyes and then the lightning bolts with blue and red. So that was the second thing I did. And that did not turn out very well. And then I kind of went like, this was too many straight lines. I need to go towards things that are more organic. I keep using that word. But that's kind of when I started doing campfires, because campfires can go anywhere you want, you know. Then I started doing delicate arch, and depending on the view on delicate arch, it's shaped in a lot of different ways. And so I would do one and then be like, oh, this one's too squished. And so I do a bigger one. And so that's really where it started. And for a while I was just doing these quilling projects. And then I was taping them to a wall in our kitchen, just kind of like had a big kitchen gallery that I'd set up during quarantine. And my kids came up and they started trying it, and they were doing little moons and that kind of thing. So they were briefly interested in it. They made me a Mother's Day card with quilled hearts. So that was cute. And then Mother's Day was coming up, and I was like, oh, I should do something for my mom. My mom is into symbolism of Utah and that kind of thing. So I was like, I'm going to try and do a bee with like flowers around it, like a honeybee. And then, cause she really likes bees. So and it took a lot of tries. Like I made a bee and I'm like, oh, I don't like this one. So I tried another one. And by the time I kind of came up with what I wanted to give her, I had kind of perfected this particular shape that I wanted to do. So what it was a bumblebee, and then it had like vines around it and flowers. And it was more just like simple symbolic. It wasn't realistic in any way. And that's the one that I made an appointment to go into Evergreen Gallery and get framed. And the man who helped me was just so complimentary and was like, where did you get this? And I'm like, oh, I made it. And he was like, oh, and was just really interested. And that's the first time I was kind of like, oh, maybe this is me, you know, maybe this is something people would be interested in, because this is a man who, you know, works in a gallery, and he seemed really interested and, you know, was telling me, oh, next time you come in, like, I don't know what I'm doing. So I made this picture, and then I cut it out with scissors, and it was very uneven. And I took it in, and he's like, next time, don't cut it like this, because we'll cut it. Just bring it in on a big piece of paper and we'll cut it down. And he was just giving me all these tips. And he's like, I can see a little glue right here. Was that on purpose? I'm like, no, of course not. So they framed it for me, and it just turned out really lovely. And I gave it to my mom for Mother's Day, and she has it up in her house. And then a friend of hers saw it and contacted me and said, I love bees too. I have a whole bee wall. If you ever wanted to sell it, I would love that. And so a few weeks later, I just went ahead and made her one and drove it over to her house. And she was just, you know, she tried to pay me, and I'm like, no, don't be ridiculous. And that was kind of my first commission, even though it was a gift. And gosh, then I had posted a few things on Instagram, and someone had said to me, you have enough items for Craft Lake City if you wanted to do Craft Lake City. So I looked into it, and this year it was all virtual. And I think that helped my chances, because they were able to accept a lot more artists than they would otherwise, because it was virtual. So I got accepted to do Craft Lake City, which is, you know, this local artisan. I've not been to it when it wasn't virtual, but people just rave about it. You know, it's at the fairgrounds and just booths and booths of all these artists. So I got accepted into that, which really made me say, oh, I gotta do a good job. So I started practicing a lot more. And that's when they kind of said, what's your online store? And I was like, I don't have one. So I set one up. So that was really the reason I did that. I put in my Etsy shop, so I had something to write down as my store. And then shortly after that, I had just been posting things on my personal Instagram. And I was like, maybe I should set up a quilling Instagram, because, you know, you start posting so many pictures of one thing and you're like, I should make this specialty. Like, you know, back in the day, I posted so many pictures of my dog that I set up my dog Instagram, you know, same type of idea. I set up a quilling Instagram and a bunch of my friends followed it. You know, I got great friends. And then, you know, just the use of hashtags, you start using hashtags quilling and that kind of thing. And I just started getting more followers, and not that I have a ton of followers, but I do kind of feel like I'm in this little community now where some of the artists, local artists that I've admired for a long time, they're aware of me and they comment on my stuff, which is just like, I'm not so flattered.
What is your background in arts and crafts? If you were reading a Martha Stewart magazine in 2002, right, you do stuff. So what else have you done that was prior to this?
You know, I was a scrapbooker, and that's it. You know, I've done paper items before, and I've always been a little crafty, you know, and doodly. I'll draw things and that kind of thing, but I don't have a big background in art. I love art. I love paintings, oil paintings in particular. And so I just love, we have all these amazing local artists around here. So I've been interested in them. And I think that kind of helped me get into the community more, because just I have been following these artists for so long and commenting on their items. And I love original art. You know, if I can get a little piece of original art from an artist before they blow up and are charging thousands of dollars, you know, I get so excited about being able to do that. So I have a few little pieces of original art from some local artists that I just love, but that's kind of my background. I've been an admirer, and I was a heavy scrapbooker for a while.
What kind of advice do you have for somebody who has been in this pandemic thinking, sometimes I have days to where there's energy and there's interest, and sometimes I don't. And I really thought this would be over sooner. So it's not yet. And I'm headed maybe into the time of year where Salt Lake City air gets a little unbreathable again, and the temperatures outside get a little uncomfortable on the cold end. And this might not be over. What has this done for you? Or what advice do you have for them where you could be like, look, maybe not quilling, maybe quilling, but if not, here's how this has helped me.
This has helped me immensely. I'm not the most mentally healthy person in the best of circumstances. And so this has just helped me so much. It really makes the time fly, which has been really helpful for me. Like, I remember there's been plenty of days where I'm like, the weeks are so short, but the days go on and on and on and on, especially when there isn't the routine of school and that kind of thing. Just these very, very long days, and I miss movies so much. I love going to movies, and that's gone. You know, just all these little treats that I didn't realize were that important to me are no longer there. And so it was just a matter of trying it and just kind of letting yourself be not great at it and just being like, I enjoy this, so I'm going to keep doing it. And it really, like, I can sit here for 5 hours and it feels like an hour, and I'm listening to so many books and great podcasts and stuff, and it's just amazing to get all that in. And just having something that makes the time fly, that you're just passionate about and you can kind of go into your meditative state and do, has helped me so much in passing the time and enjoying it. And there's been plenty of times where I've looked at other people's work and been like, oh, who am I kidding, you know? But just remind yourself, you're not doing it, you know, I'm not trying to be a famous artist, you know, I'm trying to do something that I enjoy, that I'm able to give my family as gifts that they like, that are personalized. And it's just something that I enjoy that really did get me through those early quarantine days where it was like, I can't do homeschool with my kids. I'm terrible at this. And the air is terrible, and I can't go hiking and I can't go camping, but I can sit and think of these places I love and listen to David Bowie and just go to my happy place. I mean, this is an old art form, and I just really admire all the people who are able to do it. And I get a little nervous about going in like, this belongs to India. This belongs to Turkey. It really does feel that way. So I am trying to make it my own and not, you know, just, you know, I don't want to jump in on someone else's thing. So just respecting other people's work has been just really important to me. And then just, you know, don't feel like you have to copy other people's stuff, and there's no right way to do anything. I have noticed a lot of times people will look at my stuff and say, I want to try that. And you generally don't see that with painters. Like if a painter posts something, no one says, I want to try painting. I mean, it's just a little different. And I do kind of have it like, no, this is my thing. I'm fine if other people do it, but not my family. But just letting go and being like, you know what, everyone has their own style and this is not something I own. This is not something I created. This has been around for centuries. And I hope to do it in my own way and do it justice.
Do you find that because you do something that a lot of people in our immediate area are not aware of or don't do, that how does that help you and make it hard for you to participate in a cultural way, but also in a personal way?
It helps me because they haven't seen it before, so they don't realize what's possible with this art form. So they see what I'm doing and they're like, wow, that's really amazing. And I'm kind of like, it's not, you should look online, you know, that kind of thing. So that's been helpful to get attention because people don't see it very often. And yeah, it is labor intensive to be setting paper on edge for hours and hours, but it's not like I have this great talent. Really, anyone can do it. And that's made it less like, that's what I always tell myself. This anyone can do this, you know, it's not that big a deal, but because it is more rare and unique, it's easier to get attention.
I definitely don't want to argue with you, but I do think you sell yourself short a little bit because I would agree that anyone can do a mundane, repetitive task.
What a lot of this is.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people, maybe even everybody, can learn to do something if they want to badly enough and they have the resources to, you know, like they have access to the paper and the tools and someone to help them figure it out and they have the time to devote or whatever. But not everybody sees things and recognizes here's what would be pretty about that and here's how I can physically represent it. And maybe that's a learnable skill, maybe it's not, but I look at your work and I think there's just no way that all that is paint by numbers. Like that is definitely a separate skill than coloring would be, and not just because it's paper. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying. And it does, you know, this has kind of been my new thing. Like my husband is an actor and that is not something I could ever even consider doing. I have no interest. You know, it sounds terrifying to me. But he's always said like, oh, it's been so, since I kind of got into the community theater, not only do you have this community, but you have your creative outlet. And in what you're saying, yeah, this has been mine. This is something I can do and I can get better at it. Whereas his creative outlet is singing and acting and I'm no interest. And also, I don't have the interest to get better at it. That's just not something I would ever throw myself into. So in that way, yes, it is my thing. It's something I've found that I'm, you know, good at, fairly good at, and can progress in and want to put the time into to become better. So yes, that's a good way of putting it. Thank you, Liz.
Well, like I said, my jaw just dropped when I saw the first, and I can't even remember which one was first. It may have been the meditative woman, but I don't think it was, because I think the meditative woman, when I saw her, I was like, I have to talk to Erin about this.
It might have been the giant bird. I did a giant pet portrait of a parakeet.
It was. And so it was the bird, because I don't love birds. Like, that's not my jam, just generally. And so I was like, why am I looking at a bird? Why am I so interested in this bird? It's because of the way that the bird and the paper and the everything, like, it's so obvious to me that my only interest in this picture is the art that was being used to make it, because I have no intrinsic interest in birds.
Sure.
So yeah. And then when you posted the other thing and I was like, oh my gosh, I have to find out about this, because this is beautiful and something completely out of my acquaintance with art and pictures, and definitely out of the skill sets I've been working on or anything like that. So I have all these questions, and I can recognize, because I think artistry has a lot of similar principles regardless of the discipline, I can recognize that there is skill in art happening here, even if I know nothing about how to do said skill in art. So yeah, I love your work and I love talking to you today.
Yes, thank you so much, Liz. I looked forward to it and kind of like, I don't have anything to say. There's nothing to say about it. But then, you know, when you start talking about it, you're like, oh, this is how it started. And yeah. And I am excited to keep doing it. I have been thinking about that lately. Like, what could I be doing in 2 years? You know, that would be exciting to see. So just kind of have something to pour my energy into has been, other than work, you know, I work really hard, but pouring my energy into something that really just makes the time fly for me, that I can just enjoy and has been really meaningful to me.
I want you to kind of let me ask you a question out of what you teased me with. What do you think happens for you in 2 years? Like, do you have goals for it, or is it just sort of organic in that way as well?
It's organic in that way. I like to, you know, just kind of put it out to the universe, like whatever happens, happens, it's fine, you know. And that's kind of how it's been from the beginning. Like, I felt silly posting my first few things, but I just kind of put it out there, like, maybe someone will like it. And if no one does, I like it. So who cares? And it has progressed faster than I thought. I'm a lot more busy with it than I ever imagined I would have been. So who knows? And so if you had told me 3 months ago that I would be to the point, like, I'm going to stop taking commissions in a few months and focus on what I want to do, I would have been like, oh, that's ridiculous. You know? Who do you think you are? You know, that kind of thing. But so it is just kind of exciting. I've had, you know, my uncle said something like, you should approach galleries that show mixed media things. And I'm like, oh, that's ridiculous. But I've kind of learned through life that you have no idea where it's going to go, and just kind of be along for the ride.
Thank you to my guest, Erin Hayes.
Thank you so much, Erin. Have a lovely day.
Thank you so much.
You can help more people find In the Telling by leaving a review on Facebook, Apple Podcasts, or any other podcast delivery platform. Find out more about In the Telling at LizzyLizzyLiz.com. Subscribe to the Liz Christensen channel on YouTube for bonus content. Theme music by Gordon Vitas. In the Telling is hosted and produced by me, Liz Christensen. Thank you for listening.